So if you spent, I don't know, the last 20 years trying to perfectly time the stock market, and you accidentally sat on the sidelines for just the 10 best performing days,
Right, just 10 days.
yeah, out of roughly 7,300 days, you would have lost half of your wealth.
Wow.
Just 10 days. I mean, let that sink in for a second. You miss less than 0.2% of the trading days, and 50% of your potential returns just vanish.
It's wild when you put it like
It
that.
really is, because we constantly obsess over when to jump in and when to pull out of the market, right?
Yeah.
Driven by this intense fear of missing out or just sheer panic when the headlines turn red.
Oh, absolutely.
But what if that entire approach is fundamentally flawed? Like, what if the obsession with timing the market is actually just a mathematical trap?
It completely is a trap. I mean, it's driven by this deeply ingrained human desire for control. You know, we all want to catch the absolute bottom of the dip and just ride it to the peak. We want to outsmart the system.
Right, who wouldn't want to do that?
Exactly. But the reality is that perfectly timing your entry or exit is statistically impossible to do consistently. Now, making informed strategic decisions based on your own context and the underlying economic mechanics, that is highly achievable.
Okay, let's unpack this, because today that is exactly our mission for this deep dive.
Sounds good.
We are looking at a really fascinating strategic guide and blog post from the Osul Gamma Investment Platform, and it's titled Mastering Market Timing.
It's a great piece.
Yeah, we're going to dismantle the myth of the perfect entry point, figure out how to navigate volatility without the emotional whiplash, and really look at everything from global economic signals to the specific mechanics of the Saudi Tadawul Exchange.
Which is super relevant right now.
Totally. But before we even look at a ticker symbol, we really need to talk about the investor's baseline readiness. It's like trying to predict the ocean's tides before checking if your boat actually has any holes, you know?
That is a perfect analogy. The foundational premise in this guide is that perfect timing is a myth, but personal readiness is an absolute prerequisite.
Right. Before deploying capital, you really have to establish your psychological and financial baseline. People usually just jump straight into stock charts.
Oh, yeah, looking for the next hot stock.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if your internal financial architecture is unstable, your market strategy will inevitably collapse the moment volatility hits. They call it getting your financial house in order.
Getting the house in order, right. And I want to skip the basic, you know, pay off your credit cards one-on-one stuff, because you listening already know that trying to earn an 8% market return while paying 20% on debt is just mathematically moving backward.
Mike, that's just basic math.
So let's talk about the actual tension between holding cash and investing, because there is a massive opportunity cost to sitting on a pile of cash, especially in an inflationary environment.
Definitely.
So if the market is booming, shouldn't someone just jump in, even if they are a little short on emergency savings, you know, to catch the wave? Well, it's a fair question, but it brings up the core tension between opportunity cost and psychological fortitude. Yes, holding a robust cash position, like a proper emergency fund, it does create a cash drag on your portfolio.
Not
You are technically losing purchasing power to inflation.
which hurts to
It
watch.
does, but you have to view that loss not as a penalty, but as an insurance premium. You're paying it to protect your investment portfolio from yourself.
Protect it from yourself. Wait, meaning like preventing the forced selling of your assets.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Let's say you deploy every available dollar into an S&P 500 index fund because you don't want to lose to inflation.
Okay.
And your timeline is incredibly tight. 2 months later, the market experiences a violent 10% drop, which, by the way, is completely normal.
Right, it happens all the time.
But simultaneously, you have an unexpected financial shock, a
Huh.
medical bill, your car breaks down, a sudden job loss. Because you don't have that liquidity buffer, you are literally forced to sell your investments at the exact bottom of that valley just to raise cash.
Oh man, so you just lock in the loss.
You lock it in. What was a temporary paper loss becomes permanent wealth destruction.
Wow.
That's why your investment timeline completely dictates your risk tolerance. If you're investing money that you absolutely will not need for 15 to 20 years, a market dip tomorrow is mathematically irrelevant to you.
Yeah, you just ignore it.
Right. But if your horizon is, say, 2 years because you want to buy a house, volatility is a massive structural threat. The emergency fund is the psychological anchor that lets you sit on your hands and do nothing when the market panics.
That reframes it perfectly. The cash is the moat around the castle.
Exactly.
So, assuming you've built that moat, the high interest debt is gone, the timeline is clear, the emergency savings are in place. So we open the front door and step out into the market of 2025. What are we actually walking into?
Well, we're looking at a serious recovery from the massive inflation shocks of the early 2020s, but it's happening alongside some really complex geopolitical shifts.
Right, a very mixed bag.
Very mixed. And if we look globally, we really have to start with the U.S. Federal Reserve, because the cost of capital in the U.S. essentially sets the gravitational pull for global markets.
Okay, so what's the signal there right now?
The central mechanic to understand right now is the pause in U.S. interest rate hikes. For a couple of years, the Fed aggressively raised rates to combat inflation.
Right.
And when you raise the cost of borrowing money, you immediately compress the valuations of growth-focused companies, particularly in the tech sector.
So let's break down why that happens mechanically.
Right.
Because it's not just a change in mood, right? It's a change in the actual underlying math of how stocks are valued.
Exactly, yes. Institutional investors value companies based on what they call discounted cash flow models. They are calculating what a company's future profits are worth today.
Got it.
When interest rates are high, that discount rate goes up, meaning those hypothetical future profits are suddenly worth much less in today's dollars. Plus, tech companies often rely on cheap debt to fund their rapid expansion.
So expensive debt means slower growth.
Right, slower growth and lower margins. So when the Fed finally pauses those hikes or signals cuts, it restores confidence. The mass changes and capital flows rapidly back into growth and tech stocks.
But it's kind of a fragile optimism, isn't it?
It is, because corporate earnings are still a bit uneven. The inflation beast might be contained, but the global economic engine is still sputtering in certain areas.
Right. So if U.S. tech stocks are that sensitive to borrowing costs, where is capital flowing that isn't completely reliant on the Fed's next move?
That's a great question.
And I think that brings us to the Middle East, specifically the Saudi Tadawul Exchange. Because capital is always looking for growth stories.
Oh, definitely. And the Tadawul is fascinating right now because it's recovering from its 2023 lows. And that momentum is being driven by some very localized forces.
Like what?
You've got stabilizing global energy markets, shifting regional politics, and honestly, massive government spending. The recovery there is largely engineered by the aggressive push of the Vision 2030 projects.
Yeah, and we're seeing that materialize in a very specific way with a massive spike in IPO activity over 2024 and 2025.
Exactly.
But looking at the sources impartially here, let's balance the scales. An IPO boom usually indicates a healthy market, but since the Saudi market is structurally reliant on government spending, what are the actual risks here?
You have to weigh the specific opportunities against the very real risks. The opportunity is clear, right? You get early stage access to companies in renewable energy, digital transformation, healthcare.
Which is huge.
Right. But the risk is that it all starts with the structural reliance on oil revenues. Despite the massive diversification efforts, global commodity price swings still dictate the national budget.
Okay, so if global oil prices experience a sustained drop,
then the Saudi government's revenue constricts, and that leads to a tightening of the government budget, which leads to delays in funding those massive Vision 2030 infrastructure projects.
Ah, I see.
So suddenly, the construction firms, the logistics companies, and the tech providers who are relying on those state contracts see their revenue projections slashed. Along with regional political instability, it's a very real vulnerability.
So you have this high-octane growth potential, but it is tethered to some pretty serious global and regional factors.
Exactly.
And honestly, hearing all that, it makes me feel a little overwhelmed.
Mm.
Like, if the market is this fragile, shouldn't I just wait for the absolute perfect moment when the risks disappear?
Well, here's the thing. The risks never disappear. There is never an all-clear signal.
Right.
And this brings us right back to that staggering Morningstar statistic we talked about earlier. Between 2001 and 2020, missing just the 10 best days cuts your returns by nearly 50%.
Which is just mind-blowing.
What's fascinating here is that the absolute best days in the stock market almost always occur immediately following the absolute worst days.
Oh, wow. So there's like a snapback effect.
Exactly. When everyone panics and sells, prices drop so low that value investors flood back in, causing this explosive rally. So trying to guess the bottom usually just results in missing the recovery entirely.
So if trying to perfectly time it is a bad idea, but dropping a massive lump sum of cash on a random Tuesday also feels terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do?
You use dollar cost averaging.
DCA.
DCA is the structural antidote to market timing. The concept is simple. The source actually gives a perfect example. Instead of taking a $6,000 lump sum and dropping it in all at once, you invest $500 every single month for a year.
Regardless what the market is doing.
Exactly. Rain or shine, up or down.
It's basically like setting the cruise control on a bumpy highway. It takes the emotional foot off the gas and the brake.
That's a brilliant way to describe it. It smooths out the ride, because when the market dips, your $500 buys more shares at a discount.
Right. But let me push back a little here. DCA doesn't mean we just close our eyes and ignore the world, right? We still need to know what we are buying into.
Absolutely. You don't just blindly buy into a fundamentally broken market. You have to understand the diagnostic tools, which the source gets into.
Yeah, let's talk about those.
The primary tool is market valuation, specifically looking at earnings multiples. We often hear about the P/E ratio, price to earnings.
But the standard P/E ratio can be incredibly noisy, right?
It can be.
Like, a company might have a terrible quarter because of a one-off supply chain issue, which artificially spikes their P/E and makes them look wildly overvalued.
Right. The standard P/E is just a snapshot of the recent past, usually the last 12 months.
Okay. So what's the alternative? The guide mentioned the Shiller P/E.
Yes. The Shiller P/E, also known as the K/P/E ratio, it fixes that noise issue. It looks at the company's average earnings over the past 10 years, and crucially, it adjusts those past earnings for inflation.
Oh, that makes sense. So it adjusts for that and smooths out the whole business cycle.
Exactly. It gives you a much truer, stabilized picture of a market's actual valuation.
Okay, so that's the hard math. But then there's market sentiment. Mm. The guide specifically shouts out the CNN Business Fear and Greed Index.
Yes, sentiment is huge. The Fear and Greed Index tracks volatility, trading volume, safe haven demand, essentially quantifying human emotion.
Right.
And this connects directly to a famous Warren Buffett quote from the text, "Be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful."
I love that quote. But how does that actually work in practice?
Well, tools like the Fear and Greed Index quantify that exact philosophy. When systemic panic sets in, people just sell indiscriminately. They aren't looking at the Shiller P/E. They just want cash.
Right, they just panic.
And that drives the price of excellent assets way below their actual value. So when the index screams extreme fear, the contrarian investor steps in.
Which takes guts. But here's where it gets really interesting, especially when we apply this to sector rotation in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Because capital moves based on these massive macro trend.
Oh, absolutely. Sector rotation is the lifeblood of active market analysis.
Right. And while energy is historically strong there, we are seeing a massive rotation into tech and healthcare. The Saudi Capital Market Authority's 2024 annual report actually projects that healthcare spending will reach 234 billion riyals by 2030.
That is a staggering number.
It's massive. But this brings up a really practical question. Understanding a 234 billion Ryle healthcare boom or Vision 2030 infrastructure is great. But how does the average person actually get access to that without a Wall Street degree?
Yeah, that is the exact structural bottleneck that platforms are trying to fix. And this is where the source material introduces the role of the Osul Gamma digital investment platform.
Okay, so how does Osul Gamma bridge that gap?
They do it through asset fractionalization. Traditionally, participating in massive real estate developments or asset-backed projects was restricted to institutional funds or ultra-high net worth individuals.
Right. Everyday investors were just locked out.
Exactly. But platforms like Gamma take that massive private grade asset and they legally and digitally slice it into thousands of smaller affordable shares.
Okay. So it allows the listener to gain targeted exposure to specific regulated projects without needing millions of dollars.
Precisely. And the true value here isn't just the access, it's the transparency and investor education. It allows everyday investors to diversify into tangible assets without relying on emotional guesswork.
That is incredibly empowering.
It really is.
So, to pull all these threads together for you listening, first, make sure your personal financial house is secure. The emergency fund is your armor.
Right.
Second, recognize that time in the market overwhelmingly beats timing the market. Use dollar cost averaging to smooth out the ride.
Exactly.
And finally, use clear data indicators like the Shiller P/E and sentiment indexes to guide you rather than just panicking over daily news.
That's a perfect summary.
And honestly, it leaves us with such a fascinating dynamic. Wall Street has these supercomputers fighting to time the market down to the millisecond.
They do. But I'll leave you with this thought to ponder. In a world where algorithms and supercomputers are fighting that hard, what if the ultimate advantage you have as an individual investor isn't speed or having faster information, but simply human psychology?
Oh, wow.
What if the superpower of the modern investor is just the discipline to sit still, ignore the noise, and let time do the heavy lifting?
It's such a powerful reframing. It completely changes how you look at your portfolio. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive to explore these sources. Yeah. We really encourage you to take these strategies, look at your own financial journey, and apply them. We'll see you next time.